What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet Preview Series. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and Mike Anguilano, editor at Def Pen Hoops, also editor at Palace of Pistons. What's up, guys? How are we doing?
Doing good, Mike. Pleasure to have you on the pod.
Glad to be here, guys.
Mike, we are talking Cavs today, but before we jump into that, quick reminder, you can find the show iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Also, grab some OTG merch at DesignTree/OffTheGlass. We got a discount code for you, OTG5, $5 off, but we're jumping into the Cavs today, 29th in the OTG Power Rankings. And before we get into next year, we're going to talk a little bit about last season. Mike, what was the biggest positive highlight slash takeaway of last season for the Cavs?
Oh, there were not many. I guess the biggest one would be Colin Sexton turning it around post All-Star break. He really looked like a complete bust from an offensive and a defensive standpoint. But post All-Star break, his shooting improved dramatically in a way that we never saw at the collegiate level. Pre All-Star break, he was shooting around 40% from the floor. He improved that to 47.7% post All-Star break. That's the highlight because it at least gives you something to build upon for next year. You know, if he can continue that shooting and turn into a viable threat from behind the arc, then it creates a different set of possibilities for the Cavs offense. So definitely Colin Sexton proving some of those doubters wrong in the first half to come out as a legitimate long-form threat. Is a big thing to take away.
Yeah, Colin Sexton would be the highlight for me as well. Obviously, there was a lot of pressure on coming into the year, especially at the fact that, you know, they drafted him eighth, and he's kind of the post-LeBron era start of this little rebuild they have, or somewhat rebuild they're starting at least. And I know Kevin Love was on a podcast with Gary Vee, and he spoke about how Colin Sexton was already doing like camps for youths, and he said like Colin Sexton in his eyes was already mature beyond his years. Do you like hearing stuff like that? So between the play and just seeing how a veteran like Kevin Love speaks of him on how he acts off the court, I think Sexton would have to be the biggest takeaway.
And that's a big change too, because if you'll remember, I believe it was from The Athletic early in the season, there was an article about how many of the veterans on the Cavs roster felt that Colin Sexton didn't know how to play.
Right.
And to see that monumental change throughout the year to Kevin Love saying, hey, this guy is mature beyond his years and you know, he really looks like the guy that we can build around, that's a huge jump in less than 12 months' time.
Yeah, 100%. You guys nailed it. I think, you know, Mike kind of alluded to it. There wasn't many positives, but the improvement Colin Sexton made by the end of the season was huge, not only for last year, but the Cavs moving forward, because now they at least have an idea, they have something in him. But on the negative side, what was the biggest disappointment slash negative takeaway?
Definitely Kevin Love's injury. that was a huge bummer right out of the gate. It's right up there with Ty Lue being fired. I know a lot of people were unhappy when Lue was fired after starting 0-6. It kind of had to happen, but Kevin Love being injured really put a strain on Sexton from an offensive standpoint. You know, he didn't have the veteran that he could lean on. He didn't have that spacer in the offense, made things very tough on him. And that's probably why his shooting was so poor pre-All-Star break, because he was the guy. He was handed the keys to the offense and told go and figure out a way to put some points up. So Kevin Love's injury on top of the on-the-court impact, the Cavs couldn't trade him. I mean, his trade value really hit nearly rock bottom. So two different areas of Kevin Love being hurt really hampered the Cavs big time.
Yeah, I think Kevin Love would surely be probably the biggest negative for the fact that he got hurt. He wasn't really out there. You couldn't get rid of him, as you mentioned. His value definitely plummeted a little bit last year. I'd say like honorable mention, maybe like J.R. Smith, but like I don't know if they really expected to move him. But just having him sit out the entire year was, and not being able to deal was probably somewhat disappointing as well.
I think that hurt the fans a lot more. JR came a long way from a throw-in with Iman Shumpert and LeBron saying, yeah, you know, I'll handle JR, to being the guy who really helped the Cavs win a championship. I mean, he hit two huge threes in the third quarter of game 7. and now he doesn't want to be a part of the team. It's a huge drop off. Certainly disappointing to the fans, but JR still got paid. The Cavs tried to move him. They did their due diligence, but no one was willing to take that on. So, yeah, Smith was definitely a bit of a disappointment from a fan perspective. But we still had Channing Frye.
And I'm on the same page as Mike here, and I actually have that written down in my notes is with the Kevin Love thing. You know, when he got injured, it hurt the young player's development because it's always good to have a veteran. But then with that contract he has and being injured and hurting his trade value even more, it's just it was tougher than the move. And then the JR front, it was interesting they weren't able to trade him even this offseason because of the way his contract was structured, that it was only partially guaranteed. I could have sworn that they were going to be able to at least get some type of, you know, asset for him just to help a team clear cap space, but it wasn't the case.
You and Kobe Allman would agree. And if I remember correctly, I don't exactly remember who had tweeted it out, but opposing teams wanted just the Cavs to take back ridiculous contracts for JR. And that really caught the Cavs front office off guard because they're not trying to get back into the repeater tax. They're not trying to, you know, still be above the salary cap and be a 19-win team. So I think they were asking for a little bit too much. For JR, they thought his contract would be a lot more valuable as teams are trying to shed salary quickly to get in on this free agency that we just had. I think that really hampered them, that they kind of set the bar pretty high and then they were unable to find any space for him without taking back some ridiculous salary in turn.
Yeah, and that's always a tough thing because you're dealing with a team who wants to get cap space, but they want to get rid of a really bad contract. And like you said, you know, it doesn't make sense for the Cavs to go in the luxury tax or just waste all their cap on a player that's not going to help them or a nice young prospect. But moving on to the ranking, obviously the Cavs are coming at number 29 in the OTG Power Rankings. Mike, do you think this is a fair spot for them?
Yes, I have them as the second worst team in the league. Yeah, definitely.
It's fair for me as well. As we mentioned, there's the Hornets are the clear-cut worst team in the NBA. Passed them enough on the first episode of this pod. The Cavs are a couple notches above them.
Yeah, I think maybe the only way they could get up is like Kevin Love were to come in and play really good basketball. But even then, you know, how high could they get?
Well, they could fall to 30. If they find a good trade for Kevin Love, they could be 30 and they could totally bottom out.
Now, obviously, the Cavs do have some offseason moves. Biggest move was bringing a new head coach. Tell me a little bit about him, Mike.
So John Beilein really came out of nowhere. All the talk of who were the Cavs going to hire, it all seemed centered on a young developmental coach. They interviewed tons of this young developmental type of coach to work with young guys. And then John Beilein comes out of nowhere. And you're like, where the heck did that come from? and if you go up the chain of command with the Cavs, it makes a little bit of sense because Dan Gilbert has some Michigan ties, not the University of Michigan, but to the state of Michigan. But it starts to make a little bit more sense that he goes out and gets Beilein. And really, after a couple of days of thinking about it, it's really not a bad hire. I mean, John Beilein at Michigan has had to work with players who are not the highest recruits. Those guys go to Kansas, they go to Kentucky, they go to Duke. But yet Michigan is still one of the top basketball programs in the country. So he's used to working with guys who are not the highest end of prospect. And the Cavs don't have any of those really high-end megastar prospects. So from that standpoint, getting a guy like Beilein who is used to working in, you know, without a superstar. That was one of the things that David Blatt really had an issue with, was he was expected to work with Andrew Wiggins and Deion Waiters and Anthony Bennett, God bless his heart. And then he got handed LeBron and it got really difficult, you know, to work with a superstar. And John Beilein is, in my mind, sort of the same way, where he almost works better with guys who don't have a massive ego or don't have all these huge expectations. But you hand him two guards, and the big thing to take away is John Beilein ran a two-guard set at Michigan pretty consistently, and I'm certain that that played some factor in them drafting Darius Garland. You're going to see a lot of two-guard sets this upcoming year where Garland and Sexton play together. That could be a complete disaster. That could be a offensive dream. But I'm really excited for John Beilein, and all of my cohorts at Palace of Pistons were certainly unexpected to see him leave, but I think they were a little bit happy for me as the lone Cavs fan in our group chat to see us get John Beilein, who they have a great deal of respect for.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know a ton about Beilein, but everything you said sounds really good. And the fact that he's run two guard offenses in the past in college should help them in the future after getting Garland, because they have these two guys who look like they're going to be competing for minutes, but they're going to run a two-guard set, then maybe that eases some of those worries.
Yeah, and I think another positive is, you know, Mike kind of brought up, they don't get necessarily the best, you know, high school prospects, but Michigan's been able to put a good amount of players into the NBA. You know, there's always somebody, it might not necessarily be, you know, top five pick or anything like that, but you look at guys, they developed at Michigan and now they're NBA players. They may not be superstars, but they're guys that have probably, he's gotten the best out of them.
I thought for sure that they were going to re-sign Nick Stauskas for that reason and that reason only.
That's my favorite player.
Wasn't going to happen. Sauce.
Draft pick wise, we've already mentioned Darius Garland. What'd you like about drafting him, you know, fifth overall?
I'm still warming up to Darius Garland. I was really on the Jared Culver train. I thought he fit so perfectly with the Cavs as a wing, and they're still very wing needy. I thought he was a perfect fit as a defender on the worst defensive team in the history of the NBA. Would have plugged him right into the lineup, and it just would have been a good fit. But Darius Garland presents what many draft experts are calling his top three upside. I mean, he has this superstar feel to him. He did get injured pretty early on in the NCAA season against my alma mater, Kent State, to which the Golden Flashes went on to beat Vanderbilt. But the injury part scares me, one. And two, the fit with the Cavs is really not ideal. Like I said earlier, a two-guard set is great if the coach wants to run it, but a two-guard set really doesn't work in the NBA, unless you're the Portland Trailblazers, and they have gotten to the Western Conference Finals, and that might be the ceiling. I'm weary about Garland's fit with the Cavs, particularly from a playmaking perspective. He's more of a shoot-first kind of guard. He's very much like Colin Sexton, maybe a little bit more efficient at those things, but he's very, very similar, and that worries me.
Yeah, that's everything I've seen on Twitter, is the fact that both those guys are very similar, and that could be a concern. Again, I'm not a huge college guy, so I don't know a ton about Garland, but from everything I saw on after he was drafted, that there was the concern that those two guys probably, they might not be able to coexist.
Yeah, it's definitely something. Obviously, you have two high draft picks that are guards. You know, you're hoping both guys can work out, but there's obviously a probability that one of them won't. In some ways, it's kind of like, okay, one guy doesn't work out, at least we have the other guy to kind of work with. So I guess it's, you know, a positive and negative perspective of drafting another guard high.
Yeah. The guy that I think presents the most upside, and maybe you were about to mention this before I cut you off, was Kevin Porter Jr.
Yeah.
He,
a lot of our draft guys loved him. We just talked to Dylan Jackson about the Hornets. He said he had Kevin Porter top five on his draft board.
I think a lot of people did. A lot of the other podcasts that I was listening to had Kevin Porter as this very high-end prospect that just was put into a really poor situation at USC. And that certainly has a big factor. But the other fact of the matter is that there's a reason he fell. There's a reason all these teams were willing to pass up on him. And the Cavs paid a pretty penny to get him at 30. They sent four draft picks and cash to the Pistons just to take Kevin Porter Jr. I mean, they really paid up. They amounted all these second-round picks throughout the season, and then they used them for Kevin Porter Jr. But all the preliminary things we're seeing are that he's this athletic freak, the steal of the draft. I believe in the rookie survey that just came out, he was like regarded as one of the biggest steals, maybe tied for the top steal of the draft. He has the biggest upside to slide in and really take hold of that star role that the Cavs are missing. And then Dylan Windler's the other guy that I want to touch on really briefly. He gets overlooked a lot. I think he was the only one out of these three to play in the summer league. And he looks like, pretty much as advertised, a three-point threat. And the Cavs could certainly use that. The NBA as a whole is moving towards that. But not to be discounted is Dylan Windler.
Yeah, and Windler is a guy that went to a small school, if I'm not mistaken, I think like Belmont, and you know, yes, didn't necessarily get a ton of coverage, but he did look good in summer league. And I know a lot of people are like, if he played at a bigger school, he might have went higher in the draft.
Yeah, I like Porter Jr. You were right. He was named the co or the NBA rookie star, but he was named co steal of the draft, but the boy boy. But you know, he's got an offensive pop to him. Obviously needs to become a little bit more polished, but there's definitely potential there. I mean, that was probably one of my favorite picks of the draft, going that late in the first round.
And I think it's perfect. Sorry to cut you off, Mike. No, I think it's perfect for a team like the Cavs, where they're, like you mentioned, they don't necessarily have all these big prospects. You take a big swing on a guy like Kevin Porter, it works out great. If it doesn't work out, you draft him 30th. Yeah, you gave up a couple of picks, but it's a type of risk you need to take in a situation.
And I think that's where the John Beilein hiring comes into effect. Is this is a guy who was known to have a very well structured program at Michigan, and if you can bring some of that structure to the NBA. With a lot of these guys who are kind of misfit parts. You know, Garland was hurt for most of the year at Vanderbilt. Kevin Porter Jr. had a difficult time at USC. Dylan Windler came from a small school. You mix them all together with a guy like Beilein, who really prides himself on being able to create this excellent community, really, you know, within his organization. They're really banking on, I think, Beilein to provide that structure for all of these young guys and whoever they draft next year as well.
Would you be surprised if Porter had a better year than Garland?
Probably, yeah. I think I would, because similar to Sexton last year, I think that Garland's been given good free range of the offense when needed, and I'm not quite sold on where exactly Kevin Porter Jr. is going to be to start the year either. Maybe he's in Canton to start the year. You know, maybe he comes out of camp not playing, or he's unhealthy. I mean, he didn't play in summer league for that exact reason either. So I would say I would be a little bit surprised, but I mean, the upside certainly suggests that it's possible.
Gotcha. Moving on from draft picks, free agency wise, you know, not mistaken, the Cavs only signed Jarrell Martin.
They did get Sindarius Thornwell.
Sindarius Thornwell. Yeah, solid player, developed a little bit with the Clippers. Any thoughts on these guys, or just kind of wait and see?
It's wait and see. It's wing depth. It's sorely needed. Sindarius Thornwell is pretty much just a wing body if they need it. And Jarrell Martin is another high, you know, he was a higher upside guy when he was drafted. Just some depth moves for the Cavaliers.
Yeah, nothing too crazy. Moving on to departures, obviously, got some guys gone. David Nwaba, Channing Frye, J.R. Smith, Nick Stauskas, Marquise Chris. Are they going to miss any of these guys? Do you wish they retained any of them, or does it all make sense to kind of let them go?
I know that all of us on Cavs Twitter are really hoping that Channing Frye would stick around in some capacity, whether that's just a guy that is a part of the team in the clubhouse with these guys. He was well loved by not only the fans, but the other players in that locker room. And a lot of times those glue guys, you don't know that you miss them until they're not there. And on a young team like this with a rookie coach in the NBA, I think that keeping someone like Channing Frye would have been really, really helpful. The rest of the guys were pickups throughout the season that I don't really think mattered too much. It's sad to see J.R. Smith go, another key piece of that championship team. But David Nwaba is the one that probably has the biggest impact on the court. His defensive presence at times was the only thing keeping the Cavs from being down 15 to being down 25 on this horrible defensive team. Really would have hoped that they would have kept him, especially with all the problems they have on the wing and the lack of wing bodies that they have. But he goes to a much better situation in Brooklyn. So out of all those, Nwaba makes the most on-court difference, but Frye makes the biggest difference off the court.
I'm a Nets fan, so I just love to hear that about David Nwaba.
he's a very good player who was on a really horrible team. If he stays healthy, has a lot of defensive upside.
And Channing Frye obviously is great locker room. Sorry to cut you off, Corey. Great locker room guy, and honestly really funny on Twitter.
He is funny.
Yeah, Nwaba was a guy I definitely wanted, because he was rumored for the Pacers a couple times last offseason and again briefly this year, and I was hoping the Pacers would get him. Nwaba is a guy who's had my interest. He's athletic, plays really good defense, as you mentioned.
Now, going to next season, what do you think's the biggest X factor for the Cavs?
The trade market.
That's a good one.
Well, for Kevin Love, in particular, there's been rumors for, I think, ever since he was traded to Cleveland. There's been trade rumors about Kevin Love being shipped out of here, whether he wasn't fitting in, or now that the Cavs are in tank mode, whether he's going to be traded. The the trade market may dictate a Kevin Love move. There's been speculation of Portland being interested, and that would be a wonderful fit. I just don't know if they have the pieces and the salary to send out. I really thought that the guy that they would send out was Evan Turner if any trade like that was going to happen. Now it would have to be Kent Bazemore.
Could be Hassan Whiteside.
Could be Hassan Whiteside. Boy, do I not want Hassan Whiteside.
It does give you the cap relief, though, because he's an expiring contract.
It does, yes. I just worry about the impact he has on all of our young guys. I mean, is the reason he was moved and has been on the block since basically he signed that extension with the Heat. But the trade market, I think, is going to be a huge thing to watch for with the Cavs, because Kevin Love's time in Cleveland is certainly ticking down, unless they just get off to a monumentally huge start that no one expected. The Cavs are going to be fielding calls. But once we hit that December 15th, once the rest of the league, all those players who signed this past offseason are eligible to be traded again, that's going to be the time to start to wonder about, is Kevin Love going to get moved?
For me, the basic X factor would just be player development. You know, does Larry Nance Jr. take a step forward? What does Jordan Clarkson have? Is he already peaked in his development? And then again, you know, can Colin Sexton and Darius Garland, can those guys coexist? Does Porter bring anything to the table? Watching those five guys in particular would be my biggest X factor.
Yeah, I'm with you, Corey. I think, obviously, Mike, a nice one with the trade market being a big factor for K-Love.
That's new. We don't really get that. I got to be honest with you. That's probably the first time I've ever heard someone use it as an X factor.
And I like it. I think it's a really good way to throw it in there. And it honestly is a huge X factor, because if they land a great package for Kevin Love, that could change the trajectory of the franchise if they get good picks or something like that, or even just one young player that just works out really well for Cleveland. But I think player development is really huge, like you mentioned, Corey, for a lot of the young guys. And then also, just so the Cavs have an idea of who they're moving forward with, is like, who are the key parts of this team? Who are the cornerstones of the franchise? Do we have any? I think that's what you're hoping for this season as, you know, the biggest X factor.
And the trade market doesn't just pertain to Love. Love's the most, you know, that's the biggest example of it. But they have a lot of expiring guys too. They have guys like Brandon Knight, who's going to expire, and actually played okay with the Cavs last year. He wasn't too bad next to Sexton. He actually helped him out quite a bit. You have Clarkson, who was already mentioned. He's an expiring. He's just a bucket getter off the bench. Somebody who is a playoff team may want to take a chance on that. So it definitely works beyond Kevin Love, but he is the big one. And certainly player development is the biggest part. I'm not sure if you're going to see, after 1 year of Windler and Porter and Garland, who you're going to stick with, but maybe you'll see something in Colin Sexton like, hey, Garland is just way better.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Sexton, he just fizzled out completely. The shooting from last year isn't real, and it was just a fluke. So definitely player development, absolutely.
I could also see someone, if they had injuries, maybe make a move for like a John Henson or a Tristan Thompson, just because it's a center, it's expiring contract. You need a guy like that going into the postseason. But what do you think starting lineup is going to be opening night?
Sexton and Garland in that backcourt. Jetty Osman, who we haven't mentioned yet, but he was solid for the Cavs last year as our small forward. Kevin Love at the four, and I think Tristan Thompson at the five. I know there's been some talk of Larry Nance being there to start at the five. He actually had a really nice season passing the ball. He was at times the best playmaker on the floor, which is an indictment on the rest of the team. but he would be able to provide that playmaking where Sexton and Garland are still kind of learning, don't quite have the court vision yet. But I think Thompson's presence down low is just too important.
Yeah, that would be my starting five as well. I figured they'd just go with Tristan because you're paying him and all that money. I figured he's probably going to start, at least to start the season.
And he can set some good screens for the young guards, help get them some space. But I got the same lineup as you guys, Sexton, Garland, Osman, Love, and Thompson. But who would be your player to watch next season?
I think it's Jetty Osman again. And he was the player to watch last year, but he got put in some really rough situations. He had to play the four when Kevin Love was out, and he was exposed majorly at the four. He just doesn't have the size. We were really excited coming into the season last year about his development as kind of trying to take over the point forward role. Didn't quite work out, but I think if he's playing his more natural three position, we're expecting a nice leap forward for Jetty Osman. He was asked to do way too much on offense. He was asked to do way too much defensively in guarding power forward. So hopefully this year, it'll be more natural for him. And then Kevin Porter Jr. is the guy to watch. And we talked about earlier, all the upside in the world, all of the positive news that's coming out, he just can't be discounted. I mean, he could turn into a complete star for the Cavs, or he spends his time in Canton, which is the other conservative end of the spectrum. But those two guys are who I'm really going to be honing in on.
For me, it's Colin Sexton. I'm just interested to see how he builds out the rookie campaign. I mean, those shooting splits of 43, 40, and 83, basically 84 is 83.9 from the free throw line. That's pretty impressive to me as a rookie, obviously. They're just shooting splits, but the fact that he was able to settle down, as you mentioned, Mike, earlier, you know, that story came out about players in his own locker room saying they don't think he could play basketball, and he finished the year on a high note. So how does he transition into year two? If Kevin Love is healthy and on the court with Sexton for a longer period of time, does he get even better having that sort of offensive weapon alongside of him on the court there? And how does Garland coexist? But Sexton's a guy I'm definitely interested to see.
Yeah, I'm going to switch it up a little bit. You guys went with Sexton, Osman. I'm going to go with Kevin Love here, and it kind of has to do with the trade market because you want to watch Kevin Love. You want him to be healthy, and if he's playing really good basketball or just shooting efficiently from the field, which is going to be hard because obviously the Cavs aren't a great team, it could definitely boost up his trade value, and like we talked about, it could help the franchise moving forward if they're able to get a good package for him. Now, what would be your worst-case scenario for the Cavs?
Something similar to last year where everyone gets hurt. If Love gets hurt and if Garland's knee flares up, yeah, that's a worst case. I mean, you don't get to see the young guys perform. You don't get a year of Kevin Love. It's just more dead money. So an injury riddled season coupled with Sexton's second half surge being a fluke really puts the whole organization back into treading water.
Yeah, worst case scenario would certainly be injuries. I could also say the fact maybe they just win too many games. You know, I guess that would be also a worst case scenario if they got off to a really hot stretch and maybe they still move Kevin Love. Maybe whoever they come in, they just continue to be a scrappy team in the East. But those would probably be my two worst case scenarios for this team.
Yeah, I'm going to go with no player development, like guys just not improving and getting better. And then also the guards just not gelling, like there's no chemistry between them and you don't see a future where, you know, two of the three can kind of work out. But what would it be on the positive side, best case scenario?
The best case is basically the Atlanta Hawks last year. You know, you're still bad enough that you're in the bottom 10 because the Cavs first round pick is top 10 protected. Otherwise, it goes to New Orleans. The best case is they're the Hawks, where they are still in the top 10. They are still not very good, but you see these great flashes throughout the year. Not like Trae Young type of flashes, because that's way higher than I'm expecting Garland or Sexton to, you know, to turn into. But I think if they're good enough to still be in the bottom 10, they don't make the playoffs, but they're good enough to be in the bottom 10 and make enough strides that we, you know, we start to see a picture being painted of what this team could look like, and they keep their draft pick. That's the best case scenario. I don't care about the eighth seed. I mean, I don't. It's great if they are competing for the eighth seed, but you have given up your first round pick. And what do you really gain out of it to be swept by the Milwaukee Bucks? I just don't see that. To me, it's certainly being good enough to win 30 games, 32 games, and you still keep your draft pick.
What do you got, Corey?
Best case scenario for me would be Garland, Sexton coexisting, Kevin Love staying healthy, being efficient, upping his value and being traded, them getting more assets. That would be my best case scenario. And best case scenario, I mean, if we're talking about like wins, I could see this team, best case scenario where it doesn't screw up their future, getting somewhere between 26, 27, 28 wins. Let's say 26, 28 wins, but still being getting a decent draft pick.
Yeah, for me, I'm just looking at it more from the perspective of the guards look great as a duo, you know, Garland and Sexton. You land a great package for Kevin Love. And like Mike mentioned, you're still kind of competitive, but you're still bad enough where you're going to land, hopefully, you know, top five, top seven pick. But what would be your guys' actual prediction for next season?
I am at 24 and 58.
Ooh, okay, so I'm one lower than you. I have 23 wins on next year.
I had a 24, and I have them getting a decent package for Kevin Love. Nothing amazing. I think it's a package they could walk away with. They get the cap relief, maybe one positive asset, and, you know, it's just moving forward with the next step of the Cavs franchise.
What team do you think would pony up for Kevin Love?
I think Portland's the most likely one, like you mentioned earlier. Just makes the most sense for them. They need that third star. They need someone to step up. And you don't necessarily have to pay a premium because Kevin Love's on such a long, big contract where you could probably get away with not giving up huge assets.
I should have checked this earlier, but I believe his contract is also descending. But I have to
It
check on that.
is. Well, it's weird. It's 28 this current season, 31 next season, then the following season's 31, and then in 2022/23, it's back down to 28.
Okay.
It's an interesting contract, to be honest. I don't even know if I've ever seen one
It's
like
a
that.
contract that's meant to be traded.
Yeah. And I mean, it makes sense. And you know, I think initially when they signed it, I know Corey and I weren't too high on it because of the injuries K Love has dealt with. But as the cap is going up and you see guys getting money, if he can stay healthy and put up good numbers, they definitely could move it this season.
Right.
Now, moving on to a fun portion of the show, League Pass rating. What would they fit 1 through 10?
Oh God. Four. I mean, maybe six if Kevin Porter Jr. turns out to be just this must-see show. The Cavs are gonna run a very methodical offense, I think, with John Beilein. The two guards might be pretty fun at times. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they mesh, like we've said the entire podcast. I have them around four, but maybe five, six if Kevin Porter Jr. turns out to be this huge attraction.
So my league pass rating may seem harsh, but this is just my league pass rating.
It's all harsh.
It's a one. The Hornets got a one for me too. I couldn't go underneath of the one, as I was told the scale is 1 to 10 for the Hornets. The Hornets
Glenn told you
technically would
that.
have
He
been a
doesn't even
point five.
run the show. He told you the rules.
Oh, it's not
Yeah,
zero to
that's just
ten.
funny. Yeah, the guest told me that I can't do a point five for the Hornets. So if I was doing a point five for the Hornets, the Cavs would be a one. I mean, there's some intriguement in Sexton and Garland. That can they coexist in Love? But of the a lot of the other storylines in the NBA, the Cavs are definitely lower on my list.
How about if you're a Portland fan, they're a four because you're going to be
I
constantly
think that's
making
probably
sure
accurate. Yeah,
Kevin
it's
Love is
more
healthy.
it's a Kevin Love tracker at that point.
Yes.
And it works out if you're a Portland fan because it's an East Coast game, so you can watch that and then watch the Blazers afterwards. I'm going to go
Right.
with like a 2.5 here. No offense, Mike. Don't hate me. I know it's the first time we had you on the show, but
I don't hate
Cavs.
that.
Cavs aren't super exciting, but I could get intrigued with Sexton and Garland, and then obviously if Porter pops off, K Love's looking good. I mean, there is some things to watch for the Cavs. They're not in the worst situation in the NBA, which we said about the Hornets yesterday.
I will say too, I'm a Jordan Clarkson apologist. Like I have actually kind of stayed
You
for Jordan Clarkson. Obviously, he hasn't done much to make that worthy of my love, but I've always liked Jordan Clarkson. I think there's something there as a spark plug. He just hasn't been able to get it together.
Well, it won't be with Cleveland. It will
No.
be with somebody else.
Maybe it can happen. Maybe he'll get traded. But what TV show that you've actually watched or currently watch would you compare to the Cavs?
That's a really hard question. And I had to go back and look at what I've watched recently. And I came up with a series of unfortunate events.
Okay, that's a good choice.
Not just because LeBron left us for the second time, which was certainly an unfortunate event. But I think a lot of the things leading up to the draft and with last season as well, with Kevin Love getting hurt and Sexton looking like a complete bust, but then they didn't get high in the lottery like they were hoping. They were a bottom three team. They did all the right things. They tanked enough. They won 19 games. And then they get not the pick they were looking for. They're just outside of it. In fact, the Lakers got a higher pick than them. It's just adding fuel to the burning fire. So I'll go with a series of unfortunate events.
I base this just off shows that I'm not like a giant fan of. So I'm going with Friends,
Oh,
which
people
I
might be
know.
upset with you. I don't like Friends, but
Oh,
I know some people will come for your
I
head.
know it might actually be too low for Friends, but I don't know. There's too much hype around Friends still that kind of like annoys me. It's just like, let's let it die a little bit. But then like I stayed for The Office, so who am I to talk? But I don't know. I'd say Friends.
Office is way better.
Yeah, I would definitely
That
go
was
with The Office.
Seinfeld.
Yeah. So Mike took this next level and he had a great comparison. Like Corey and I have just are just comparing it to a show that we are watching at the same level that we're watching the Cavs. So for me, I'm going with Superstore. Not a great show. It'll pass time, nothing amazing, and I'm not gonna, bend over backwards to watch the
You
Cavs
could
either.
fall
So
asleep to it, you know.
yeah.
Just kind of something you put on in the background. It's like, oh, that's still on. Oh, okay.
You wake up at like 2:30 in the morning. Oh yeah, episode seven.
Wow,
So
it's been
yeah.
great.
But any other topics or thoughts you guys want to catch on Cavs wise before we get out of here?
No, I really think I'm good. This is the most I've talked about the Cavs since, I don't know, probably the draft. I think there's a decent amount of hype in seeing what happens with John Beilein and how he's able to corral a lot of these young kids on this team. You guys had mentioned that player development's the biggest X factor. I'm starting to turn into that. I think that'll be the thing to watch the most in addition to the trade market. But the two guards, the Cavs are kind of going along the unbeaten path. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
And I'm really intrigued with Beilein too. I didn't mention this before, but it's like you've kind of hinted at it. So many teams are going with these young player development coaches. You saw the Nets with Kenny Atkinson, the Hawks with Pierce. Like they're going this route when they go with an older guy, which has worked with a lot of younger players in college, but it's definitely something different than what we've seen going on in the NBA.
This isn't something new for the Cavs either. Several years back after LeBron left the first time, they were going after Tom Izzo from Michigan State. So this is not the first time they've tried to dip into that college pool of coaches either.
100%. Mike, pleasure having you on for the first time. Mike, give yourself a shout out to everyone where they can find your work and find you on Twitter.
Yes, I am the managing editor at Def Pen Hoops, so be sure to follow Def Pen Hoops. I'm also the editor for Palace of Pistons, and we have a wonderful team over there. As much as it pains me to hear about the University of Michigan as we get ready for college football season. And you can find me on Twitter at my last name, Anguilano M22. Going to get into some basketball stuff. It's coming up quickly, guys.
Corey, always a pleasure talking hoops with you. And you can find the show, obviously, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.